always loved, was the only man I couldn't be with. That night, so full of sadness, grief, and angst, it hit me. Instead of his being the only man I couldn't be with, I realized that Jack was the only man who knew the whole truth and loved me anyway. The only person who had carried the same weight I had for all these years. With that, I crossed the yard, retrieved the key from inside the conch shell by the back door, and tiptoed upstairs. I slid into bed beside Jack, and in typical Jack fashion, he didn't say a word, only pulled me closer. He kissed my forehead, and I closed my eyes. In the moments before I fell asleep, I knew that this was it for me. I would never leave his side again.
33. Coming Home. Sloan. April 16th, 2010. Dear Sloan, the guys and I were talking tonight about the importance of goodbyes. Doing what we do, we become acutely aware of how to do them right, how to live every moment like we might not get the next one. So I promise you, Sloan, every day of my life, I will make sure to tell you how I feel. I will kiss you and savor the moment. Every single day, I will do that goodbye well, so you never have to question how much I love you. All my love, Adam. Every time my phone rang, when the boys were at Mother's morning out, I imagined a million worst-case scenarios. They had fallen off the jungle gym, choked on a goldfish, gotten pummeled by a kid on the swings, and, most horrific of all, an active shooter was in the preschool. I know, but due to my past, I'm allowed to have these irrational fears. So when Emerson, out of breath from sprinting, appeared at the top of the guest house stairs where I was sitting with Caroline, my phone in her hand, and eked out, "Scott!" I was panicked before it was even time to panic. "Why didn't you just answer it?" Caroline asked disdainfully as I said, "Hey, Scott!" My tone was supposed to be breezy, but ended up sounding forced and high-pitched. "I think," he said, "Hey, Sloan, I made it." But the reception on the other end was staticky, so I only got about half of what he was saying. Then I heard, "Mumble, two, mumble, civilians." "What?" I asked, putting my finger in my other ear and running downstairs, as if it were my reception that was bad. "I've talked to a couple of townspeople about the accident," he said. "I think I might be able to get some..." "Hello?" I shouted. "Scott! Hello?" He was gone. I sighed and walked back upstairs, tossing the phone onto the bed, where Emerson was now lying and Caroline was saying, "You're so sweaty. Get off my cleanish sheets." Emerson shot up when she saw me. "So?" I shook my head. "He's there. He's talked to a couple civilians. I think there may be more, but he got cut off." "He's there, Sloan," Caroline said excitedly. "He's looking." Emerson took the sweater she was holding and cuddled it to her chest, saying, "Oh my gosh, Scott is going to find Adam and bring him home. Then Scott will win a Pulitzer for the story he writes. I will get to play Sloan in the film adaptation. I will win an Oscar." She sighed, dreamy-eyed, and Caroline and I laughed. "But you're ready to give up acting?" Caroline asked, a note of teasing in her voice. "Well," Emerson said. "Now, if only my sister would go to the doctor," I began, but Mom's loud, "Girls," from downstairs, interrupted my sentence. "Up here, Mom," I called. Caroline eyed Mom warily as she came up the steps. "Where have you been?" Emerson raised her eyebrow at me. I had always been so jealous that she could raise one eyebrow, while mine seemed to be attached as though connected by a long string. Mom crossed her arms. I was up working out early, you'll be happy to know. Caroline gave her the up and down and said, Uh-huh, likely story. Mom rolled her eyes. I thought you would be proud.
Oh, I don't think she doubts you were getting exercise, Mom, Emerson said. I think she's questioning where you were exercising and with whom.
Gross, Emerson, I said. Mom was predictably beet red now. Emerson, she scolded as Caroline was simultaneously saying, Emerson, gross. Now it was Emerson's turn to roll her eyes.
You are all such prudes.
Mom was holding a box in her hands, and I noticed she looked very teary.
What's that? I asked.
It's a box from Grammy, she said, sniffing. There's a letter and a piece of jewelry for each of you.
I miss her so much already, Caroline said, wiping her eyes. What are we going to do?
I hugged her and kissed her on the cheek. We all sat down on the floor in a haphazard circle, and Mom handed us each a letter and a box. I did a double take because I noticed Mom was wearing an engagement ring, but it was on her right hand, and it was definitely my grandmother's. Breaking the tension, Caroline pointed to Mom's hand and said,
So what you're saying is I'm not getting Grammy's big diamond?
We all chuckled through our tears as the giant diamond James had given her twinkled on her right hand, and Emerson said,
It's a shame, really. You needed a big diamond.
I took a deep breath as I opened my envelope to find a letter in my grandmother's handwriting. My dearest Sloane, how I wish I didn't have to leave you now and add to your sadness and turmoil when your life is so up in the air. But life seldom delivers what we wish. What I want you to know, my darling girl, is I see in you a quiet strength that will deliver you through whatever battles life throws your way. You are an incredible talent and a terrific mother, and you possess the kind of loyalty and character not often seen in the world today. I believe in you, Sloane. I believe in you and the power of your dreams and the strength of your conviction. I want you to know that no matter what happens down there, I am up here fighting for you. I hope you feel that. I want you to feel that. And in case you can't, I left you something that might help. I miss you already, sweet Sloane, and I'm not even gone yet. I miss you, but I will always be with you. All my love, Grammy. I was, needless to say, a total mess, as were my sisters and my mom. I could barely see as I opened the box, but I didn't really need to because it was a piece I knew well. Grammy's wide gold bangle with her hand-engraved monogram on the front was in a nest of cotton waiting for me. She wore that bracelet every day, and now I would. I couldn't have imagined a better gift. I knew I would do what Grammy said. I knew I would be strong. But I didn't like the feeling, when I had for the first time in months, that it was perhaps possible that someday soon I could be in mourning in this same way, only much deeper, for the man I loved with all my heart.
34. First Loves. Ansley. When I found out I was pregnant with Caroline, it had been difficult to tell Jack goodbye. When I found out I was pregnant with Sloane, it had been inconceivable. Telling him goodbye felt like telling my heart to stop pumping blood. How could I live without him? How could I continue with my life, put one foot in front of the other, make beds and brush tiny teeth like nothing had ever happened? When I found out I was pregnant with Caroline, I had felt myself slipping back into something with Jack. When I found out I was pregnant with Sloane, I had already fallen. Our weekends together had become all I could think about. Though I feel like I did a good job pretending our life at home was business as usual. And the strange part was that I still loved Carter. I still looked forward to his coming home at night and kissing him goodbye in the morning. I still loved the way he held my hand, the way his arm felt around my shoulder, the way Caroline squealed when he tossed her into the air. I knew with everything inside of me he was the man I was supposed to be with. I had tossed and turned, my stomach in knots, the nausea more from having to tell Jack goodbye than from the morning sickness. This was a man whose kiss I would lie awake in bed at night craving. A man whose arms around me felt so right and so natural that I couldn't imagine I had ever let them go. But at the same time, I knew how incomplete my life would have been without children, children Jack didn't want. So I knew I had made the right choice. When I walked through his front door that morning, Jack knew before I even told him. He swept me up in his arms and kissed me, and when he pulled back to look at me, he said, "Oh, no, please tell me you aren't." I shrugged. It was a terrible way to feel. As much as I had hoped and pined for another baby to love, and as happy as I was about it, being pregnant with Sloane meant saying goodbye to Jack. He sat down on the couch then and pulled me into his lap, my legs up on the cushion, our faces close together. "I've thought about it so much, Ansley," he said, a fervor in his voice I knew instinctively was reserved for me. "I know what I said all those years ago, but I want this now. I want you and Caroline and this new baby." He paused and looked me straight in the eye when he said, "I know I said this last time and I couldn't convince you, but this time I think you feel what I feel, Ansley. I know you do. I know you love me and you feel like you can't live without me. I want you to come here with me. I want to marry you. I want to be a family." I was drawn into his words so completely that I could almost envision myself saying yes. Until he said the word family, and I remembered what I was really doing here, what this decision would cost me. Carter and I had longed to be a family, and yes, it was because of Jack, but that was what we had become. It was Carter who was there when Caroline had her first fever, who had stayed up all night with me, making sure she was breathing and checking on her every half hour to make sure the Tylenol was working. It was Carter whom I had walked down the aisle to, bought my first house with, and fought over sconces and doorknobs with. I loved Jack. I would always love him. But I couldn't bear the thought of breaking up my family. And what would happen if I left Carter? He'd never get to see Caroline again? She wasn't biologically his, after all. I couldn't break him like that. He was her father. I wouldn't take that away from him. I laid my head on Jack's shoulder, my face in his neck. I knew the scent of him so well. I breathed him in, knowing it would be the last time. It had to be the last time. I steeled everything inside of me that felt like it was crumbling. I had to be strong. Strong for Caroline, strong for this new baby, strong for Carter, my husband, the man I had pledged my life to. Jack pulled me closer to him, and I knew he could feel my tears on his neck. I knew he wanted to protect me and love me, but I would not put my children or my husband through that. When I made love to Jack that night, I knew it was the last time. I slipped out in the middle of the night, leaving him a note. It was fitting that it was raining that night as I drove away from Jack's house. away from Jack, away from a man who made me feel like I was perfect, beautiful, and special all at once. I was sobbing so hard I had to pull over. Walking away from him was, without a doubt, the hardest choice I ever made, and I'm almost embarrassed to say it was one of the greatest losses I've ever grieved. He wasn't dead, but he was dead to me. I had to say goodbye. I had to walk away, knowing I could never talk to him, see him, feel his lips on mine again. I had to shut the door completely because I knew if I left it open even a crack, I was in danger of sacrificing the wonderful life I had for the longing for one I didn't. It took a year for me to start to feel like I could breathe again. A year until I could convince myself I had done the right thing in walking away. After that, I still thought of Jack, still longed to tell him something funny, and still wished I could have him in my life. But this was the life I chose, I reminded myself. So I chose to be happy in it. I hoped that wherever he was, Jack was happy too. I never would have let myself imagine there would come a day when I would find myself with Jack once again. On our quiet street in Peachtree Bluff, the morning after my mother's funeral, waking up with him for the first time in decades, I remembered that letter as well as the day I had written it. Dear Jack, please don't hate me for leaving you like this. If you do, it can't be any more than I hate myself. Please don't doubt how indescribably much I love you. Please don't doubt how unfathomably difficult this decision is for me. In losing you, I feel like I am losing a part of myself, one of my very favorite parts, in fact. But to tear life apart for Caroline and this new baby is too big a responsibility for me to bear. I can't put them through that. I have hoped there was a way I could still have you in my life, that maybe we could talk from time to time, or even visit every now and again. But I know where that would lead, and it would only end in heartbreak. For now I have to close this door, or I will not be able to follow through with my decision. And it feels intolerably selfish that I am the one to make it with no agreement from you. But I believe in my heart that you understand. Thank you, Jack. Thank you for my children. Thank you for loving me enough to let me go. Thank you for loving me enough to let me be the mother I need to be. There will never be a day I don't think of you. There will never be a day when the thought of your lips on mine will not cross my mind. You will forever remain in my heart and my memory. I wish with all my might that you will find a woman who loves you as much as I do and cherishes you for all you are the way I do. While it is hard for me to imagine anyone could ever love you as much as I do, I hope that for you all the same. All my love, Ansley. I looked up at him. He was smiling down on me, and I felt the tears roll down my cheeks.
Oh, Anne's, no. What's the matter?
I feel so awful, I said. I just left you in the middle of the night. He smiled at me sadly. That was one of the worst nights of my entire life, I continued. I will never be able to describe to you how empty I felt writing that letter, leaving you behind. But I knew it was the only way.
He nodded. Reading that letter the next morning felt impossible, but also, in a way, poignant.
Were you mad at me? I snuggled in close to him, for once not longing for my youth, but grateful we were here now.
It's hard to explain, he said, kissing the top of my head. I was mad at you, but I understood your decision. Even when I was begging you to stay, I knew you had to leave. He shrugged. He was right. Plus, the mess we had made was too big to clean up. He kissed me on the lips this time. It's a smaller mess now, Anne's. It's a mess we can manage.
I gazed up at the stunning canopy bed with the ethereal white curtains I had copied from Phoebe Howard. The walls were a light gray on the lavender side, so they felt warm, not steely. It probably wasn't a color I would have chosen for Jack the Bachelor. It was a color I had chosen for me, a color I had chosen for our life together. As I lay there, feeling totally at peace, I finally admitted that all this time I had been decorating this house for me. I could feel Jack's eyes on me, and I smiled at him and rolled over.
What? I asked.
I'm just thinking what a treat it is to wake up beside you. I smiled back.
The feeling is mutual.
I glanced at the alarm clock on his bedside table. I most certainly did not approve that Sony with the radio for the design scheme. I had about a half hour until the girls woke up. I had thought ahead enough to bring my exercise clothes with me so I could come in after they were all awake and act as though I just got back from a walk. I thought I was quite sneaky. I groaned.
I need to get back over there before the girls get suspicious.
Oh, the girls. They were all grown up now. But I still needed to protect them. I still needed to set a good example.
Speaking of the girls, Jack said, but then he trailed off.
What? I asked.
He shook his head.
Nothing. Never mind.
I crossed my arms.
Jack?
I don't want to mess up this tentative hold I have on you, he said.
I leaned over and kissed him. It's not tentative, Jack. It's permanent.
And that means we tell each other the truth and ask the hard questions.
Okay, if you say so, he said.
So here's what I want to know.
Why did you never tell the girls? I mean, it's not like you would have to tell them the whole truth.
Ah, yes, the big question. Might as well go ahead and get it all out there in the open.
I had grappled with telling the girls for their entire lives.
It's tricky, I said. It's not like an adoption where you're meeting your birth parents, someone who had you and gave you up. In their minds, I don't even know the man. In their minds, their father is Carter. The other half of their genes is a test tube.
He nodded.
I guess I get that. Do you ever want to tell them?
I laughed. Oh, Jack, I've wanted to tell them a million times. Of course, for years I never thought it would be possible. Carter didn't want to know who you were, so the girls certainly couldn't. But then, once he found out...
Sloane had developed a fascination with her biological father when she was studying genetics. She pushed us to find her father, and Carter and I had agreed. It was incredibly difficult for him, of course, because he had found out that Jack was Sloane and Caroline's father inadvertently when we ran into him on the dock in Peachtree Bluff. Jack's shock over my Emerson pregnant belly told Carter everything he never wanted to know. Carter was terrified Jack would take over a piece of his role in their lives. Carter knew Jack. He knew he was a wonderful man. And in some ways that made things even harder for him. I had known for years that Jack wanted to know the girls, so I knew he would be thrilled. I still don't know how she did it, but Caroline talked Sloane out of it. To be fair to both of them, they had to agree. They had the same father, and they knew it. You couldn't tell one and keep it from the other.
Then we decided, I said, we would tell them when Caroline graduated. We didn't want her going out into the world and looking for you.
But Carter hadn't been dead a year when she graduated, and that seemed like a terrible time.
For years after Carter's death, I grappled with whether to introduce the girls to Jack and let them know the truth. It felt like a cheap ploy, a band-aid for their suffering.
You lost your real dad, but here's a replacement one.
And only for Sloane and Caroline. Not Emerson.
There were so many times I decided to sit down and tell them, and then something would always happen. Caroline was getting married. Adam was getting deployed. Emerson was feeling low, and I thought this would intensify it and make her feel distant from her sisters, like we had this whole family she wasn't a part of. I sighed. Now I can argue it's a bad time because Adam is MIA. But there's always going to be something. It's always going to be a terrible time. So I think I should just tell them. Alone. And then hope they will come to you. Jack shot up in bed. Ansley, no. I was incredulous. What do you mean, no? I thought this was what you wanted. He rubbed his head with his hands. I do want them to know eventually. I really do. He pulled me in close to him. But I just got you, Ansley. I can't lose you. If they aren't happy with this news, then it will drive you away from me again. I had spent years grappling with Jack's role in my life. His contribution to it had weighed on me for decades and shaped everything I felt about myself. It had taken me what seemed like a lifetime to get here. But I couldn't see myself walking away from him now, no matter what. I told him that, and then said, I guess I think, what's the worst that can happen? They know they were from a sperm donor. Besides that one time, they've never asked about it. What if they don't want to know? Jack asked. I answered instantly as if my mouth was on autopilot. Well, then we have to respect that. He nodded. Let's wait a little while, okay? Okay. I smiled. I thought it was sweet that he was concerned, and really, I'd waited 34 years. What was a few more weeks? Then he leaned over and kissed me. Let's do this whole morning over again, he whispered. Then he kissed me again. Let's pretend we are long-lost first loves, finding one another again, and none of this is even a concern. As he kissed me again, I wondered who in the world wouldn't be happy to have a man so kind and generous as their father. It wouldn't be much longer until I found out.
35. Moments. Sloan. May 1st, 2017. Dear Sloan, there are moments in life to retreat. We've all known, experienced, and felt those inevitable scenarios in which we have no choice but to walk away. As a soldier, I'm faced with them every day, and sometimes I don't walk away, complicating the situation further. But just as often, more often, I'd like to argue, there are moments to advance, to lunge forward with purpose, with power, but most importantly, with passion. Because any action taken without passion, well, it's simply a waste of time. All my love, Adam. Caroline had taken a huge step in getting her life back. She had moved into the house James had bought down the street, with him. Emerson had offered us the guest house, which I thought was really sweet. I made like I was being selfless, but in reality I loved being in the main house because Mom got up with the boys almost every morning. That was way better than privacy if you asked me. Mark was a seemingly permanent fixture in our lives. If we were at dinner, Mark was at dinner. If Emerson left town for an interview to promote her Edie Fitzgerald movie, Mark went with her. They were connected at the hip, and she seemed like a teenager again. Same with Mom, who was trying to deny she was back together with Jack, but it was painfully obvious. The whole world was in love. The whole world had their man. I had a cell phone I kept glued to my hip in case my uncle got enough bandwidth to Skype me or the military called to say they had found my husband. It was a sleepy morning around Peachtree Bluff. The boys were at Mother's morning out. Mom was at the shop. I was taking the day off to get some painting done at the house. I was almost at the point where I thought I might want to sell some of my paintings, and I knew this new series, with its sky blues and soft pinks and yellows, would fly out of her shop. I felt proud, and I couldn't wait to get those commission checks. As I dipped my brush into the pale pink, the color of many a peach tree sunset, Emerson walked into the living room.
"I need to talk to you," she said.
This was why artists had studios. "Can it wait?" I asked. I noticed she had a bag in her hand, and for a split second I was afraid she was eloping. If she was eloping and I didn't tell Mom, Mom would absolutely kill me. It would be almost as bad as if Mom found out Caroline and I knew Emerson was sick and hadn't told her. She shook her head and I sighed.
"What is it?"
"We're going to New York," she said.
I laughed.
"Yeah, right. Good luck with that one."
She set the bag down on the floor and crossed her arms.
"James called me and said this Hamptons party he and Caroline are going to is really a party honoring Caroline."
"For what?" I asked. "Her contributions to Barney's?" I laughed. I thought it was funny. I was in a pretty good mood this morning. Emerson smiled.
"No, actually. Our sister raised more than $2 million for a charity that funds arts programs for at-risk schools and physically challenged communities."
My jaw dropped.
"Come again? You mean our sister, Caroline Beaumont?"
Emerson nodded.
"That's awesome," I said. "I'm so proud of her, but I can't leave my kids."
"You aren't," Emerson said. "We're all going, and Caroline's nanny is going to keep them at her house in East Hampton."
I could feel my mouth getting dry and my pulse beginning to race.
"Okay, then I'm not going because I'm sure as hell not going back to New York."
"Sloane, our sister took care of your children for 5 weeks without a word of complaint. She was with them all day, every day, helping Mom. She paid all your bills, including your obscene credit card. She would do anything for either of us without a second thought. She is being honored in a big, big way, and we are going to be there for her."
Wow. Emerson was on fire. "Jeez," I said. "You've spent way too much time with her this summer."
"I have packed your bag, and I have packed the boys' bags."
She paused.
"I mean, obviously Caroline will have what we are supposed to wear to the party sent out to the house, but your other stuff is packed. We need to leave the house at 8:45 in the morning."
I nodded, but I knew now was the time I could get Emerson to do something for me. I set my paintbrush down and rubbed my hands together. I reached out for Emerson's hand.
"Want to go for a walk with me? Get some fresh air?"
She shrugged, and I could tell she was suspicious.
"Sure."
As we made our way down the steps, she said,
"Actually, Sloane, I'm not feeling that great. Can we just go sit on the dock?"
It made my stomach churn. My little sister's arm was wrapped around mine. I pulled up her sleeve and studied a bruise above her wrist. I shook my head.
"Emerson," I said breathlessly.
I unhooked the latch on the gate and we crossed the street. We both sat down at the end of the dock, our toes trailing in the water.
"Remember when we used to do this when we were kids?" I asked.
Emerson smiled and nodded.
"Yeah, I remember. It was a huge deal when I was tall enough that my feet actually touched."
"I know, we're grown up now," I said, looking out across the water, past Starlight Island, out to where our stretch of water met the deep, dark ocean that sometimes felt so pristine and beautiful to me, and other times so dark and looming. Today was a dark and looming time.
"But you're still my little sister, Em. You always will be. And I'm not going to stand by and let something bad happen to you."
Emerson had canceled her last two doctor's appointments, which was a classic Emerson move. If you don't want to deal with it, avoid it. Emerson turned. I'll go to New York on one condition, I said. I will go if you go to that hematologist Caroline found while we're there. She scrunched her nose. If I have to face my fear, you have to face yours, too. Emerson rolled her eyes. Fine, she said. Grand, I replied. I noticed she still looked nervous. I knew how she felt because I felt nervous, too. If you didn't have the finality of a diagnosis, in her case, or in my case, a body, you could deny what was happening to you. It will be okay, I whispered. Once they figure out what's wrong with you, they can fix it. She shrugged and bit her lip. Crammy dying and Adam being MIA has put everything into perspective, she said. I mean, my whole life. I leaned back, resting on my hands. Everything I've thought was important feels kind of stupid now. She paused. I mean, I might not be able to have kids. The treatments might not work. She sighed, and I could see her chin quivering. She looked up at me, searching for an answer. Sloane, I could die. I couldn't even entertain that thought. Em, no, I said, sitting up, pulling her into me. I had been the fragile one these past few months. I had been the one who was crumbling and needed someone to give her strength. Now it was Emerson. We don't even know what's wrong yet. I squeezed her hand and whispered, you're going to be fine. I looked out over the water at a shrimp trawler making its way back home. I didn't want Emerson to see the fear on my face or the tears in my eyes. My sister might be really sick. My sister could die. The fear of flying and going back to New York was nothing, absolutely nothing, compared to the fear of losing my sister. I thought of Adam and what he would do, and I made it my personal goal to get Emerson any and all treatment and help she needed. I thought of the Army, of its motto, of what Adam always said to me when I was feeling conflicted. I would continue to repeat it to myself over and over again as I faced my fear over those next few days. Mission first. People, always. This is a moment to advance, I said out loud the next morning, reaching my hand into my pocket to feel the corners of the paper with Adam's words that he could never have expected would help me through this anguish. My other hand was holding AJ's. This is a moment, I said, this time with more certainty in my voice, to move forward with purpose, power, and most importantly, passion. I looked seriously at AJ, and he looked seriously back up at me. Because action without passion is a waste of time, Mommy. I nodded again and took a deep breath. Exactly. I would not be afraid. If I was afraid, I certainly would not let my boys see. Fortunately, AJ was too young to be affected by how sweaty my palm was. I like that, Mark said from behind me in line, holding his boarding pass anxiously at the ready. That was how I felt about Mark. He was always at attention, like he was afraid he'd drop the ball and this dream of being with my sister would simply evaporate as if it never happened. This is a moment to advance. But, Emerson chimed in, there are moments to retreat. Mark put his arm around her. Damn, he said. That man is nothing short of a poet. Language, I said, smiling and looking down at AJ, as I tried to put out of my mind that this one flight could wipe out most of our clan. Mom had stayed up half the night reading articles to me about how the likelihood of dying in a commercial plane crash is statistically zero. I don't know when she got so brave. Maybe it was because I was her child that she wouldn't let me see she was afraid. Although, I couldn't help but notice that Jack was here. She had finally admitted to Emerson, Caroline, and me that she was, in her words, sort of dating Jack. Taking things slow, seeing how they go. If they weren't married by the end of the year, I'd be shocked. I loved Jack, but it was still weird to see our mom with someone who wasn't our dad. I couldn't say that out loud to my sisters because they thought I was ridiculous, but I was allowed to have my feelings. That's what Adam would say if he were here. My heart skipped a beat when I thought of him. I had this fantasy that while my phone was off on the plane, they would find him and I would land to a voicemail saying he was okay. Because that's how life works. No matter how vigilant you are, sometimes you miss the moment. As I put my phone on the boarding pass scanner, I could feel the sweat gathering on my brow. I was doing this. How was this possible? I was getting on an airplane. I was going to New York. Both for the first time since I left 6 months after 9/11. If Emerson hadn't pushed me, I'm not sure I would have made it onto the jetway. And this was with a double dose of Valium. I couldn't imagine what it would have been like without it. As if this weren't bad enough, I had the dream again last night. Emerson, Caroline, and I were playing on the beach. Caroline's hair was blowing in the salty breeze. Emerson was running back and forth from our castle to the spot where the water lapped the shore. It was a perfect day, by all accounts, easy and free. Another childhood afternoon full of sunshine and free of worries, until I looked around for Mom and didn't see her. My pulse quickened for a split second until my eyes locked on her. She'd been wearing a mint green and pink bikini that day. She was so tan, so beautiful. But that day, she had her arms crossed, and her face looked angry and closed off, a way it had never looked before. It scared me to see her like that. There was a man standing with her, and he looked angry, too. Angry and sad. He was talking a lot, and she was shaking her head. I remember his hair, how the light shone on it, how it was dark brown, but in the sun it practically looked black like Caroline's. I couldn't hear Mom, but I could tell she was yelling. Not like she did when Caroline and I had been arguing all day, really yelling like grown-ups do when they're mad. I'd never seen her do that. It scared me to death. Then Mom was rushing us into the boat, and I could feel her fear. It wasn't until later that I realized we had left our beloved fairy stones, the ones we took with us everywhere. It had actually happened long ago, but in my subconscious it must have been incredibly fresh, because even though nothing particularly terrifying happened, it was still the scariest nightmare I had. Seeing my mother like that and wondering who this stranger was and why they were so angry with each other. I strapped AJ into the window seat so he could see out the window, though who would want to look out I couldn't possibly imagine. I was in the middle, and Emerson was beside me for moral support. Mark had gotten upgraded to first class. He acted like it broke his heart not to sit with Emerson, but let's face it. Emerson was not as great as first class. Mom and Jack had Taylor a couple of rows in front of us. I was glad they had taken him because I was starting to get very, very sleepy, and I knew I couldn't have kept up with him on the flight. Emerson held my hand and said, "So what do you think of Mark?" My eyelids were getting heavy as I said, "I love him, Em. I think he's a prince." I saw her smile dreamily as my eyes closed. As I started to drift off, I could feel the breeze on my face and the sand underneath my knees. I sat up straighter, willing my eyes open so I didn't have to dream it again. I looked around. Taylor was strapped in his car seat, and I could see his tiny legs kicking. I was at the perfect angle where I could see Mom's face. Her arms were crossed, and she seemed upset, angry even. My eyelids were heavy again, and I couldn't tell if the mom who was angry was real, in the plane seat, or in my dream. I opened my eyes again, right before I saw the man she was talking to. I looked forward again to Taylor's kicking feet, to the stream of light that was pouring through the plane window, how it made Jack's dark brown hair, almost black. My eyes closed again. I forced them open as Jack turned and I saw his expression. He was always so calm and laid back. This face was anything but. This face was mad. In that moment, I couldn't hold off anymore. I felt my hand drop out of Emerson's and my head collapse back into the seat. As my subconscious took over and wandered back into my dream, it hit me. The man on the beach that day wasn't a stranger at all. The man was Jack. Caroline's house in East Hampton suited her perfectly. It wasn't big, and it wasn't on the water, but every inch of it was elegant and just modern enough. The entire palette was water blues and creams with touches of gold, sea grass, and plenty of natural beauty from resin coral and oyster shells. I'd never been to it, of course, and walking through the front door, I instantly felt calm. I assumed that's what Mom had been going for when she designed it. I was exhausted, but proud, too. I had made it. I had lived through the flight, and we were here. Mom and Jack were staying in a hotel while the rest of us piled into Caroline and James's house. When I walked into the living room with AJ and Taylor, who promptly scampered off to explore, I did a double take and felt my decor-induced calm dissipate as quickly as it had come. As Caroline ran to meet us, I said, "What is that?" "Well, it's so good to see you too, sweet sister," she said. "Thank you for the warm greeting." "Caroline," I said, an edge to my voice, "why is Jack's painting here?" She looked at me innocently. "Oh, well, we thought it would be nice to donate it to the cause. We're going to auction it off tonight as I accept my award." "No," I said. "I told you I'm not ready. I told you I don't want my work out there in the world yet. It's still just for me." "But Sloane," she said, that crafty calm in her voice, "don't you remember? You owe me." I felt the color drain from my face then because she had me. I did owe her. She had paid my credit card bill and I owed her a favor. There was no way out. To change the subject, Caroline showed me the white linen maxi dress she had bought for me. It was simple, but somehow made me seem taller and made my shoulders seem more sculpted. As I wore the dress later that night, feeling somewhat confident, despite the fact that I was totally out of my element among the coiffed to perfection men and women milling about a neighbor's yard, I was so proud of my sister. Her hair was swept up off her face in a simple updo that made her neck seem swan-like, and she was wearing a rose-colored silk jumpsuit that would have made anyone even slightly less tan look sickly. As I was admiring her behind her podium, I came back into the moment, and it registered with me what Caroline was saying. I felt all the breath leave my body as I heard, "You won't find her on the internet. You won't see her in the magazines. She's under the radar, but she's one of the hottest up-and-comers in the art world today." She paused. "We're going to start the bidding at $5,000. I understood now how people felt in those dreams where they're naked in public. I may as well have stripped my dress off. All of my pulse points throbbed. I was a failure, a fraud, a nobody, and $5,000? She was insane. This was humiliating. No one was going to buy this thing, and I was going to be a laughingstock. Only people started putting their hands in the air. Caroline left her podium and stood beside me. 'See, Sloane? It's beautiful. It really, truly is.' She looked at me intently and took my hands in hers. 'You're beautiful, and you can do this.' She meant I could paint. She meant I could put myself out there. But she also meant I could raise my two sons and support my family. Hell, I could even get on an airplane and fly to New York. A few moments later, Caroline hugged me and said, 'Did you see that? You just raised $11,000 for at-risk youth. Aren't you proud? See what good your art can do?' It was one of the proudest moments of my life so far, a defining one, because I had faced my biggest fears that day. I had gotten back on an airplane to New York. I had released my art back into the world. I touched the monogrammed cuff on my arm, realizing Grammy was right. I was strong, and I was brave. I knew Adam would come home. I believed it with all my heart and soul. But if the worst happened, if the boys and I were alone forever, we would be okay. I walked up to my painting, the one that had somehow set me free one last time. My family was standing all around me. Caroline was yammering on excitedly. "And now I'm going to be your agent, and we're going to get you in galleries. I've already had 3 requests, and it's going to be amazing." I knew she needed this almost as much as I did. I took a sip of champagne as I said sarcastically, "Good one, Caroline." She stopped in her tracks. "What? What do you mean, good one? I'd say this was pretty epic." I ran my finger down the white blob in the painting, then the black one. "This was supposed to be Jack's painting," I said. "You sold Mom and Jack." "What?" Mom asked. "Caroline Murphy Beaumont, I knew I shouldn't have let you talk me into this. This is why I said no after Grammy's funeral." I turned and looked at her. "You're the white streak. Jack is the black one." Jack put his hand to his heart.
"I'm the black one? Is that symbolism?"
"Sort of," I grinned.
"Am I darkness or something?"
"Of course not, Jack," I smiled sneakily. "You're the groom." Everyone laughed as Jack said,
"From your mouth to God's ears."
"I didn't even realize until I was finished," I said. That was what I loved most about painting. The surprises. The way a piece could take you over if you let it lead you. 3 hours later, I emerged from the marble, mosaic-tiled shower, my hair wrapped in a towel, my body swathed in one of Caroline's plush robes, and smelling of her expensive rose cream. When I walked out of the bathroom and into Caroline's living room, I saw Emerson and Mom crying, and Jack was as white as a ghost. I sensed this was about Adam. But if the military knew something, if they had found him or realized they weren't going to find him, they would have contacted me first. My stomach rolled as I sat down on the couch between Emerson and Mom. A YouTube video was playing on Caroline's huge TV over the fireplace. Well, actually, James's huge TV. Caroline hated TVs over the fireplace. I was suddenly freezing. "What?" I asked. "Please tell me." But in a way, I knew already. Though I tried not to watch, often I'd seen the footage of the soldiers in Iraq, their helmets, their rucksacks, their tanks. I'd heard the ear-splitting gunfire, the missile launches, the yelling, the radio static, the repeating of coordinates over and over again. I'd seen them behind concrete walls, behind little more than sandbags, among the desolate remains of fallen cities. I'd seen armed men fight armed men. I'd never seen anything like this, but I knew what it was. The grainy, tan picture shot from above. I could make out the tops of the men's heads, the long shadows and the slow motion running, the white numbers and letters in the 4 corners of the screen. This was persistent surveillance footage from a Predator drone. At first, I felt heartened. Maybe this was rescue footage, but even through the grainy picture and the faraway view, I could see these men had no helmets or weapons, and a few of them appeared to be shirtless. It was impossible to get a clear view of them, and the silence was deafening. There was no commentary, no voiceover, just nightmarish quiet. The only clue we had, the only tip, was a simple title below the video frame: Escaped American POWs. Common sense told me Adam and his unit were the only soldiers missing. This had to be them. If it was current footage, and if he was still alive, one of these running men was my husband. How did you find this? I managed to eke out. What is this?
Kyle called me, Emerson whispered. He follows a YouTube channel that posts footage filmed by American soldiers, but the commenters seem to think this footage was leaked.
So did this just happen? I asked, my voice shaking. Are we sure it's even real?
I'm sorry, Sloane, Em said. We just don't know.
I could barely make it out on the camera, but there was a man running, then a man on the ground, still. Even through the faraway picture, I could tell from the way he fell that he had been gunned down. This wasn't a trip or a fall. It was a death. Then the playback ended as abruptly and terrifyingly as it had begun. Play it again, I said. And pause on the fallen man.
Sloane, Emerson said gently.
Play it again. Mom was sobbing horrible, agonized sobs, and Jack said, Sloane, I'm going to call the post. We're going to get to the bottom of this. My entire body was covered in chill bumps. My mouth was dry. My insides cold. Was that Adam? Were there more dead men? And if it wasn't Adam, it was surely one of our friends, wasn't it? My first instinct was to call Major Austin, but I couldn't. If what happened after that man fell was what I could only assume had happened, I didn't want to know the truth. It was as if someone had reached inside me and pulled my heart out of my chest as I screamed, no, 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 no. I wasn't crying. I was too numb and terrified for that, the exact same way I had felt that day after Major Austin and the chaplain had come to tell me Adam was MIA. That quiet that defied explanation, the intensity of a pain that can't even be expressed. My sisters were trying to hug me, but I was so far beyond comfort. Jack took my hand, his phone up to his ear. Is it true, Jack? Tell me it can't be true. I can't explain why it was Jack I turned to. Maybe it was because he was a man, or because he always seemed to take charge. Maybe I had to admit, it was because he was the closest thing to a father I had left. He put his finger up, and I could hear him saying,
Then you've seen it too, yes. Is there any information about the soldiers?
He walked out into the hall, and the tears finally came. I picked up my phone and typed to Marianne, Have you heard anything? She responded immediately, No, why? If she didn't know yet, there was no point in worrying her. Oh, God. What if that man was Tom? What if it was Adam? Could any of them possibly have survived? I couldn't breathe. Even still, I managed to type back. No reason. Just wondering. I leaned over and put my head between my legs. Mom rubbed my back.
Sloane, it's going to be okay, Caroline said. We're going to get to the bottom of this.
But it wasn't going to be okay. It could never be okay. Earlier that night, I had felt like I could do it alone, like I could make this work, but now when I finally feared that the worst had happened and my nightmares had come true, I felt more hopeless, lost, and terrified than I ever had before. And I couldn't begin to imagine how I might face this world without the man who had changed mine completely. It took months for Adam to forgive me after I told him I didn't want kids. But we had worked through what still remains the biggest test of our marriage. It hadn't been easy, and there had been so many times I thought it might go another way, but in the end, Adam decided he loved me more than he loved his future, unborn children. He had committed his life to me, and that meant he owed it to me to try to work it out, no matter how badly I had screwed up. When I look back on it now, I can see that the issue wasn't ever that I didn't want to have children. It was just that after what I had endured, I had so many layers of fear and terror to pull back and so many years of trauma to work through. Marrying Adam and realizing it hadn't been scary, but instead had been wholly wonderful, was a huge part of my healing process. But the pivotal moment of change didn't have anything to do with Adam. Emerson, Caroline, James, Vivi, Adam, and I were in Peachtree visiting Mom. We set aside a full week every